Okay. Well, we were just having a little conference here, so this is our third and final time. And so she was telling me the things I had said wrong, you know.
I was apologizing for not doing very well.
So would like to welcome you all here today. My name is Matt Fife, my wife Jennifer. We are from the Roanoke Church, and we're excited that all of you are here in Roanoke and having an interest in improving, enhancing your marriages. Our marriages are a reflection of Christ and the church, and I firmly believe that when our marriages are thriving, that reflection is its best, and we are at our most effective witness to the world. And that's, of course, what we want to be, is a witness to the world, and we do that when our marriages are thriving.
So our topic is knowing through difficulty. And just for the record, that is not Matt and I for that picture. But all the rest of the pictures were submitted by us. And we'll be talking about how life's difficulties have encouraged us in our marriage and our knowledge of God. So this is the current stage of our family. Our son Josh, he's 20 and he works full-time for a gutter company. Our daughter Charity is 18 and she's in her senior year. Javen is 14 and he's a freshman at RV High School. And then Caleb is 8 and he's in third grade, he's homeschooled. And Joy is 4 and she's in preschool. So we will be just giving a little history of our marriage and then focusing mostly on the last 3 years, but doing a little pit stop in Gridley on the way. So as far as the history, this is our wedding day, and I was from Ripon, Ohio. My parents are Bob and Mardell Dotter, and my mom was a Stoller from Laddie. So I was second of 4 girls. So my sister Michelle, then me, April, and Beth.
My family on my right, the Randy Carroll Fike family. My mom was a Barth from Roanoke, so that's why we're kind of planted here. I have 2 younger sisters. Both are married and have families of their own.
So this is our current family. There's been a lot of change, a lot of growth, and we've had a lot of good years. So just wanted to, we've had a lot of blessings, weddings, and births. So just because we're talking about the difficulties today doesn't mean that our marriage has been all dark. And there's Matt's family. So we've had many positive events and experiences in our marriage in the past 23 years.
So we'll start off with the first 5 years. You can reflect upon your first 5 years and how they went, but these were our first 5 years. So we got married and we were young. I will admit it, I was 21, Jennifer was 19. We felt very prepared for marriage at the time, but I am not going to allow my children to do that. So Jennifer's parents weren't terribly comfortable about letting their daughter go. She being from Ripon, Illinois, far apart, so they asked if I would move out there, and so we did, and we lived out in Ohio the first 11 years of our first 11 months of our marriage. I wanted to be back in Illinois, and so in July of 2000, my father and I loaded up the U-Haul, and we moved back to Roanoke. We moved into a Pizza Hut. Actually, Roanoke has 2 Pizza Huts, if you didn't know that. And actually, there are actually 4 plexes that look like Pizza Huts, so we got no pizza delivered to our door. I worked in construction the first part of when we moved back, and then in 2001, I started working in long-term care or what we would know as a nursing home. So we were very transient our first 5 years. We lived in 4 different homes. I worked 4 different jobs, and we attended 3 different apostolic churches those first 5 years. So we moved around quite a bit. I had dreams of working in agriculture, specifically with livestock. I love cattle, enjoy cattle. And this was the day my son was showing me how to do chores that afternoon. And pretty proud dad that afternoon. So
Josh, our oldest, was born about 3.5 years into our marriage. And when we first moved back to Roanoke, I helped Frank and Kathy Souter and Rich and Julie Lindbergh homeschool their kids for about 2.5 school years. So that was my first exposure to homeschooling. And that just kind of set a foundation and a vision for me and how I wanted to have our family be someday.
So I went into farm in the worst way, as I had mentioned. And so the first 5-8 years, I was a very discontent husband. Jennifer really helped me through that, but I just was discontent. And so when the bank said we could buy a farm and Jennifer said we could move, that was all I needed to know. And we moved then to Gridley, Illinois. And so we began there, and I was finally living my dream. Since a 10-year-old boy, this was what I always wanted to do. But while we were at Gridley and going through those years, I noticed some changes that were happening. I wasn't sleeping very well. I was having a harder time with that. I would get angry very quickly. And I don't know if you remember that lady's effect with the second time, the unnatural effect when she was with her child up there as we were watching that. That was often my effect when I was engaged with Jennifer and the kids. So I was becoming unengaged. We didn't know it at the time, but what we know now was that was at the beginning of a long journey with clinical depression.
So when we moved to Gridley, I was pregnant with Charity. Thankfully, that went well. We had young children, basically, and we didn't really know very many people. So. And we were really blessed. Once we moved, we realized we had several families on our road from our church in Gridley, and they helped us a lot with babysitting. But several months after Charity was born, we had good friends that had a baby, and then he ended up passing away about 6 months later from a terminal illness. So that was a very difficult journey to know how to help in that. And then later, about a year and a half after that, the same close friend that she actually passed away from leukemia. So that was just a really hard time. When I was pregnant with Javen, our third, I had preterm labor at 25 weeks. And so I had several months that I was on a light bed rest, and people would take my kids and watch them and bring us meals. And I just remember being so ready for just more of a normal life. And after Javen was born, he had health issues and had to be hospitalized twice. And he had a blood transfusion at 2 weeks. They thought that he had a rare genetic blood disorder, but after the blood transfusion, it actually resolved the issue. And also we had Earl Ringer anointed him with oil when we came home from after we came home from the hospital. They had a little ceremony on a Wednesday night where the ministers and him prayed over Javen. So that was really special, and we believe that that was also part of the reason that he has done so well.
So Earl told us that on the way to church that night, he stopped at Aldi's and got a bottle of olive oil. So it wasn't a special oil, but the experience itself was quite a moving experience. So, we often look back at our Gridley years, and those were the hard years. We really had a lot of challenges. So there's the first few days of Javen's life under plugged up to all kinds of stuff. We were living in Gridley. I was working in Peoria at Apostolic Christian Skylines, about a 55-minute drive. And my responsibilities were getting bigger at Skylines. We were still farming and trying to do that. And I was really overwhelmed at the time. And I just remember laying in bed and telling Jennifer, I am sorry, I cannot do this anymore. Something's got to change. And lo and behold, that night, something changed. God brought 90-mile-an-hour winds. And it took everything away. Actually, this used to be the machine shed, and it was completely gone that next morning. All the cattle set up was a twisted metal mess, and all the cattle had to go that next day. And so God took the desires of my heart and took them seriously. But that next morning we did wake up to this, but we also woke up to this van. 40 individuals from the Gridley, from town, and from the Apostolic Church showed up with a backhoe, with tools, and they were ready to work. I didn't know exactly what to tell them to do, but they were ready to go. And by the end of the day, a lot of the farm and the mess was cleaned up. So through this experience, we really were encouraged through God's people. They showed up in a mighty way and we were very much encouraged by that.
We also learned that God is gracious. So I really felt like our problems were self-inflicted. We were the ones that chose to move away from our family and from our support group and friends. We were the ones that chose to get into debt. And so I really felt bad asking God for help. And looking back, it's kind of like a toddler that's like driven his tricycle into a rut or mud or and just can't get out and doesn't want to ask their dad for help. But it was like we needed help, and so I just prayed, Lord, help us, and he did. And so I was just so thankful that he pitied us. Like it says in Psalm 103, as a father pitieth his children, so the Lord pities those who fear him. That even though we had gotten ourselves into the mess, he still was willing to help us.
So the farming endeavor didn't go as I had planned, and it was for the most part taken away. And the responsibilities at Skylines continued to increase. And so at the age of 31, I was promoted to become the administrator or lead person at Apostolic Skylines. So I accepted the position and we moved back to Roanoke and we built a home in Roanoke and left the farm completely. And so this was a time actually that my depression really got pretty bad. I was 31, in charge of an organization. I had very little experience with managing people. So I felt like a failure at work, was working long hours at work and didn't feel like it was going well. Would come home, I was exhausted, felt like a failure as a dad because I wasn't engaged with the kids. And then a failure as a husband, not being very communicative with Jennifer. And so it was really a dark time. I can remember about midnight coming home from a board meeting, and it was around 24. There was a clump of trees off to the right, and I just thought to myself, you know, if I just let my hands off the wheel, you know, it probably would be best. And that's really where my mind was. Wasn't in a good place at that time. So had just finished counseling. All of this was, I was depressed, but also I had this incredible anxiety, and I couldn't quite figure out what that meant, what it was, but literally, when I was in groups of people, I could not handle it. I had to find a door. So I would come to church, and I would have to sit on the edge of the bench. If I sat in the middle, I literally had to get up and get out. I could not handle it. It was quite a thing. So work through that counseling and that, and literally 2 weeks after the last session, I was put in as a minister at the age of 34. So now I felt like things, I had to be all things to all people. I had to be at work, at home, and now the church. And quite frankly, I felt like I was failing at all of them. So I don't know if you've had times of this, but these were moments, years, several years, where I wrestled with God. I wrestled with him intensely, saying, why are you making life so hard on me? You know I can't handle this. Why are you doing this to me? I'm going to die of a heart attack or a stroke before I'm 50, and then what? Not, you know. So I really wrestled and was frustrated with God at this time.
So something else that was traumatic that happened after he was put in the ministry was that he had to get braces. Actually, I'm just saying that kind of as a joke, but he did get them like 2 weeks after he was put in the ministry.
It wasn't funny.
So. He always said it gave him something to connect with teenagers on. And then Caleb Asher, our fourth child, was born in 2014, and he's almost 6 years younger than Javen. So we had taken foster classes after Javen was born, thinking after all those pregnancy issues, maybe we wouldn't have any more biological children, but God had other plans. And I should note that it said living in the town of Gridley. So up to this point, we had always lived in the country, and we had moved to town to simplify our lives and so that we could focus more on ministry-type things. But we learned it was best for Matt to be with livestock. It was something he always enjoyed. And so in 2018, a couple that was ready to move off the farm asked if we would be willing to switch houses. And so Matt was excited about that. And we also learned we were expecting our fifth child, Joy. She was born in July. So it was kind of an overwhelming year with just moving to a farm and adjusting to all that we had to take care of, and then having our fifth child. In November of 2018, Matt just really kind of hit an emotional breaking point. And we just said to ourselves, we can't keep functioning like this. So he was able to get on medicine and has been doing much better ever since. So as far as the depression issue, we didn't know if we should talk about it, but we just want to encourage, if there's anyone out there that's been struggling with something for 19 years, it was 19 years of marriage that this had been going on, and we would really encourage you to get professional help. He had been through counseling a couple of times, but that just wasn't enough. So we're very thankful that he's been doing well since then.
Very much so. And so 2020 is going to be a year that we will be talking to our grandchildren about. We're not going to forget about this very easily, are we? It was a difficult year for everyone. One thing we found solace in, and one thing that we could do in 2020 was fish. And we love to fish, and so we would spend a lot of time fishing. But picture of joy and charity doing that. But I work in a nursing home. And so working in a nursing home and COVID, there are particular challenges with that. And so COVID hit, you know, the government didn't even know what to tell us to do. When the government doesn't know what to say, you know you're in trouble, right? Not really. But nonetheless, I was overwhelmed. And so I decided to step away from ministry. I just told our elder, I'm sorry, I can't do this anymore. And so I stepped away from ministry and just poured everything into work. It was an intense time. It was before the residents had access to the vaccines. And so we had an outbreak, and literally a third of the residents who got COVID died. They died. And we would put people in the COVID unit wondering if they were going to come out. It was a terrible time. I come home from work one night, and I told Jennifer, I said, this feels like hell. All the death, all the destruction. And I can't do anything to stop it. And so I really did feel relieved that I was able to set aside a church work, and you know, our lives did simplify in some respects, like yours did when you couldn't go anywhere and do anything, you know. So there was that aspect of life that was good. But because of the work that I was doing, and because it was so intense, and because there was so much death and destruction in the process, I became very bitter at the church. It was a hard time where I felt I was spending all my time trying to serve the most vulnerable. And in my mind, and what I was thinking, what I was processing is so why do people want to make this so much more difficult and get together and fellowship and worship? And why do they have to do that? And I just became very, very bitter. So between liking not being a minister because of the workload and my bitterness, I really anticipated that I was just going to retire at the time from ministry and not go back. But God worked on my heart. He saw the errors of my thought process and the feelings that I had. And he healed my bitterness. And I was able to go back and begin preaching in December of 2020. This was a time that we really had to lean on God in a heavy way, but a time that it was hard really for me to read anything in scripture other than the Psalms and make any sense of it. I just had to press into God and just find comfort in the Psalms. That's really what I found. But one part that was really healing and how God did change that bitter attitude was I learned that we all have a capacity to care. So what do I mean by that? Well, my capacity to care was for the elderly and the most vulnerable. That's what I really cared passionately about. For others, their capacity to care was they really needed to be in church. They really needed to be together. They really needed to be encouraged with fellowship. And so when I saw that we have a capacity to care and there's limitations, I thought, well, that's good. That's their capacity. They can't manage both, and I can't manage both because we have a capacity to care. And Jennifer and I learned that God's so much different. He can take all these issues we're dealing with, and he has the capacity to deal with all of them at the same time.
So just expanding on the capacity to care, we've just talked about that a lot since then. And We realized that we just needed to give grace to each other as fellow believers. Sometimes we're really passionate about an issue and we can get frustrated that other people don't share that same passion or vision. We can be very passionate about mission work or the issue of abortion or adoption or fostering. And we just realized we have to give grace to each other because we all only can care about so many things. So that's just been really good for us to think about. The other thing I learned was that God can use your weaknesses to help other people. So his very first sermon back into the ministry, he stood up and told the church how angry he had been at them. And I was absolutely mortified. I did not know he was going to say that. And I just wanted to call under the bench. On the way home, I was like, honey, why did you tell them that? You finally got over it. Why would you even bring it up? And he's like, I just needed to be open. So anyway, the weeks after that, we started receiving notes in the mail from people in mostly the Midwest that were in the healthcare field or worked for nursing homes. And they just really, they just said how much they appreciated his openness and that he had gotten over it. He was able to move on. And it gave them hope that they were going to be able to do the same thing. So that was just really good for me, and even to see that they shared that same burden as he did. I thought I was being understanding during the process, but I cried when I read some of the notes that they wrote, and I realized I hadn't been as understanding as I thought I was. It was just hard to balance having a husband that works in a nursing home and having kids that have lives that need to move on.
So about a month after the outbreak at Skylines, on October 31st at about 1:30 in the morning, we were sleeping and we were woken by lights outside of our window and a knocking at the door. And so I got out of bed, opened the door, and it was a police officer. And a police officer proceeded to tell me, he asked, are you Joshua Fike's father? And I said, yes, I am. And he said, your son's been in a serious auto accident, and I just want you to know there was alcohol involved. And so these are the moments we as parents never want to go through. This was to be woken up in the middle of the night and be told by a police officer, your son's been in a serious accident and alcohol was involved. Literally lost strength in my knees and I fell to the ground, just fell to the ground. And could not hardly deal with the trauma of it.
Yes, I also had a very physical reaction to the news. I told him I'm either going to throw up or pass out. I don't know which one, but I have to just stay in bed. And he went down to the hospital. Josh was 17, so one of us had to go be with him right away and be there when the officer basically read his rights or kind of told us what was going to happen from that point. So I laid in bed and I couldn't sleep and I couldn't really move. And so I just prayed for like 3.5 hours and he called me with some updates on Josh. We knew he was responding when we got the news, but we didn't know a lot other than that. So thankfully, he ended up doing really well. But we learned later, as far as the accident goes, that he was coming home with some friends and they were kind of racing on
from a party.
On the back road, so one car had passed him and he was going to pass the other car, and he went off the road and hit a culvert, and his truck cartwheeled end over end twice and then rolled, so that when his friends got to the truck, they couldn't find him right away. It was dark and he was in the field. He was about 30 feet from the truck and he did not have a pulse, so they called the EMS. Thankfully, when the EMTs arrived, he was breathing again. But when the sheriff said, it was just so much to process, when the sheriff said that you know, he was in a bad accident and alcohol was involved, it was just like my world just turned upside down. Like I couldn't believe this was happening. So it says, you know, we were devastated. And then I was just really, it took me a long time to process how betrayed I felt. Like I had spent, he had been homeschooled until high school, and so I spent a lot of time with him, and I felt like I knew him well, and he had always gotten very positive feedback from his teachers about him. He was very responsible and conscientious, And so it was a total shock, to be honest. I never thought I would be a naive parent, but I was.
Do you want to talk about picture?
Oh, yeah. So one of the hardest things was telling my dad what happened. So my mom was actually pretty sick at that time with COVID. And I called and told him that. So the picture is my dad, Josh, and Matt in Indiana. They met because my dad sold his truck to Josh. So they had this deal worked out for probably a couple of years that when Josh turned 16, he could buy my dad's truck. So that was really special that every day I'd go home and my dad's truck was sitting in our driveway. And so that was really disappointing when he wrecked it a year and a half later. But it was more difficult to tell my dad what had happened. And then Matt actually had to tell his dad as well.
Can you speak to the picture?
Yeah, so the picture is, I just was looking out the window at OSF and just took that picture. It was a beautiful fall day. And strangely, I felt very peaceful. I just stayed at the hospital all day. Josh mostly slept, and I just texted close friends and family and told them what happened. And even though I was initially very shook and couldn't hardly move, being there that day, I just felt so peaceful, and I just thought, there's absolutely nothing I can do about what happened. It's done, and all we can do is move forward from here. So I was just thankful God gave me that peace.
So once we were over the trauma and shock that our son's life was going to be spared, we then anger set in and disappointment. We just could not believe what he had done to us as parents, lying, and then just doing these things. My role was really to just listen to Jennifer and try to help encourage her as she processed this homeschool mom. You know, all these bad choices that we didn't realize Josh was making. And it was a very discouraging time through that time as we tried to encourage that, hey, what you did for those moments in his life weren't vain. It's really, they weren't vain. And as we saw God, we praise God for his mercy. He chose not to take our son. In the moment of his sin, he chose to not take him. And we were so incredibly grateful and thankful for that.
And it also made us realize how much God loves us, even when we hurt him. Like, it hurt us so bad, but we still love Josh so much. And yet we knew how disappointed we felt. And it just really made us think about how the Lord must feel about us when we sin or do things that disobey him. And it says here, it was easy to feel like a failure as parents. And that's absolutely true. And especially when it's your oldest, you're just like, oh my goodness, if this happened to the oldest, you know,
what's going to happen next?
I actually had someone come up to me and says, I know it's easy to feel like a failure, but I made bad choices too as a teenager and I had good parents. And for some reason that was just really comforting to me. Oh, so. Wish we could say at this point Josh turned his life around, but he didn't. So he just continued through his senior year. It was kind of a difficult one because of all of the restrictions, and it was just very interrupted. But he did start repenting a year after the accident, so we were very thankful for that. But a couple months into it, he started backpedaling and going back to old friends and old habits. So we were really pretty frustrated. By the time he was 18, when he graduated and he was 18, we were getting pretty frustrated, thinking that maybe that we were gonna have to basically set some standards, and if he couldn't meet those standards, maybe he should move on.
So yeah, it was a time that, you know, you love your children, but this was a time that I did not like my son. He was frustrating his mom. You know, God spared his life. Why can't you see all of this? You know, what is going on with you? And like Jennifer said, we were so frustrated that we were just days away from sitting him down and saying, if you don't do this, this, and this, you're 18 now, you're going to have to leave our home. You can't keep living here. And so it was a hard time as parents, as we were struggling, working through that. But then at that moment in time, about that same time, on July 12th, 2022, I received a call from Jennifer, and she was crying, and she said that Josh and others at work were in a work-related accident. She said electricity was involved, and I think some of them fell from their ladders. So he works for a gutter installation company. So that's what he does. And so when she said that, she said he's probably been sent to Streeter Hospital. So I got in the car, and Streeter's about, I think, 45, 50 minutes, I think, from where I work. And so I got in the car and just started driving. I didn't exactly know which hospital he was at. So I called there. I said, you know, I explained the situation. Is he there? And they said, no, no one's been from that accident's been sent here. Why don't you check if at the hospital at Ottawa? So I called the Ottawa hospital. I said, is he there? And they said, no, he's not. Why don't you check with the Streeter Hospital? So I didn't know exactly where I was going. So, but finally, I talked to his boss, and he said, Josh has been sent to OSF in Peoria. So it took me an hour and a half to get to a place that was only 10 minutes away by the time I got there. But what became very concerning up to this point, this first hour of this experience, we thought that Josh, yes, was in an accident, but we thought he wasn't hurt very badly. And so then I saw a text on my phone. You're not supposed to look at your phone and text and drive, but I saw that. And it said that Josh was life-flighted to OSF. So then I knew it was pretty serious. And so what we have here is, so the crew is 11-member crew. There were 10 people on the crew that day. They don't typically work in large groups that way, but this was a particularly large house. It was three stories, and so they were going to use all their manpower to get it knocked down. And so they were up on tall ladders, and so you have long strands of gutter, seamless gutter, and so it usually takes two people. And so two guys were on their ladders. They were moving the gutter and trying to work it around an antenna on the house. And when they were working around, that gutter got too close to a high voltage electrical line. The electricity actually sparked or jumped across. And then anybody that was touching anything metal on that roof was electrocuted because it was electrified. So Josh was actually on the other side of the house. Here is his ladder. His buddy was, his name was Colton Duran. Colton had just put his tools away, and so he took his hands off anything metal. And Josh had his hand on the gutter here, and he had the level here. And when Colton looked over, he just happened to look over at Josh, he saw his hands were on fire. And so, and Josh, not only were they on fire, but he couldn't move them. They were stuck to the gutter. And so, but when the electricity stopped, he was able to, and the abruptness of it, actually he let go, and then he realized he was falling. And through this course of time, he was aware, knowing what was going on. He just remembers thinking that feels like hell, and that he was so glad that he no longer had to feel that any longer. But then he realized he was falling, and he said, but I guess I'm going to die. And so he fell from his ladder here, flipped around, hit his head, and laced his head open like a scalp. He just completely scalped it off. And then face planted into this flower garden there, just a foot away from hitting face first that retaining wall. And so it was, of course, a very traumatic experience. There were six people up on ladders at the time. A number of them were touching something metal, and a number of them were electrocuted. The one that was closest to the high power line was electrocuted the worst. His name was Seth Duran. And both Seth and Josh then were both life-flighted to OSF to get the trauma team there. Once that was addressed, then they were life-flighted to the Springfield Burn Center. And it was there that I walked into the room, and there were four people around him just scraping off the black, just scraping it off, taking it off. Thankfully, some of the black was actually blood. It wasn't all burnt. But nonetheless, it was quite a traumatic experience.
So just some pictures from the hospital. The one on the left is the only picture we have of him on the day of the accident. So we're so thankful that he was cognizant, he was able to speak, he was able to get up and use the restroom, but he really couldn't. And we were so thankful his fingers were not burned worse, especially on his right hand. But he had about 100 stitches in his head and about 30 staples and about 5 different places on his face where he had stitches. So it was really amazing he didn't hit his head on the retaining wall, but I found it even more amazing that he didn't lose his eyesight in his right eye, because he had an incision that went from the middle of his forehead through his eyebrow, and then he had stitches here too. So he so easily could have landed and had something poke his eye. He had about 10, we went home with a list of 10 burns for his dressings. So it was both shoulders, both hands, both knees, both shins, and then his wrist or forearm here, and then part of his chest.
Basically, wherever his skin was touching something metal,
against
the electricity
the
blew
yeah.
out of his body.
Yeah. So Wednesday, Charity and I took Charity and Javen to see Josh, and that was a special day where the Double L team came down, and we were able to spend quite a bit of time with Tom Duran, the father, because when there was two people up with in the room, everyone else had to be in the lobby. It was very strict as far as visitors go. But it was really hard to be there with the Duran family because our news kept getting better. Whenever they checked Josh's internal organs, everything was coming back good. And for them, their news just kept getting worse. The last picture, we were discharged on Thursday evening, and we went to see Seth before we left. And that, it was just really hard to see what they were going through. And they had three boys were on ladders. So Colton was beside Josh. He was uninjured. But they also had another son, Brandon, that was hurt very badly. And he was at another hospital.
So, it's just quite a thing. You want to go back to that. The big guy, 6'2", and he loved his hair. And so it was taken off. So he had all he had left was just a clump of hair back where they didn't shave it off to manage the stitches. So, but you can go on there. It was quite a thing. Not only for the boys who were physically hurt, but if you can imagine, so these are 17, 18, 20-year-old boys, and some of them were standing on the ground preparing the next pieces of gutter. They look up, and these guys are falling. Some of them hit concrete. It was just quite a traumatic experience. Thankfully, the one that wasn't hurt was actually, he was retired from the military, and so he knew how to triage, and so he took complete control of the scenario. Colton Duran, he just took complete control. It was about 35 minutes until the emergency personnel arrived. These were, there was 5 volunteer townships or towns that were involved. So it was obviously probably the worst thing they'd ever experienced. So to have Colton there, you know, just keeping people stable before they could be sent off to the hospital was quite a thing. So then moving on here, we were just so incredibly thankful for sparing our son's life a second time. For the second time, Josh's life was spared. But we felt so incredibly bad for the Duran family, because Seth Duran did pass away, did die. He just was burned too badly. Internally, his organs were just too, it was a hard situation. And his fall was probably the hardest as far as he hit the ladder, and he just was in really bad shape. But we were just so touched by the outpouring of prayers and love and gifts for Josh and our family from local believers, from the National Church. It was amazing. It was amazing. I know social media does this, but so that next week we were going to be showing at a local county fair, livestock. And so I had to call the show, which was about 45, 50 minutes away. It was in Henry, Illinois. And I called and I told them what had happened. She said, "Oh, we know about that. We've been praying for you." I'm like, wow, you know, and just different experiences like that. It was just amazing to see the church really show up in a mighty way. And so I, during this time, of course, you know, I was watching Jennifer and she was just pouring herself into Josh as he came home with his wounds, having an hour and a half or so to address those wounds every day for weeks upon weeks. This boy who used to boss his mom around now had to plead with her to get him a glass of water. You know, he could do nothing for himself. And so for her just to do that in such a humble, loving way was just very powerful for me.
Yeah, it was also very heartwarming to see how much Josh's siblings care. They had been really disappointed and even somewhat ashamed after his first accident by some of his choices. And especially for Charity, she was converted and she kept praying to see changes in him. And when that didn't come, it was really hard on her. So it was really neat to see how much they care for their older brother. Both of them on their phones, they changed their home screen to pictures of Josh. And amidst all of the wonderful things people did for us, God's word continued to bring comfort and strength to us. And just his presence, we could feel it. And it was very encouraging to see how God was bringing Josh's heart back to him. We were very thankful for that. I should note that he did go through two surgeries. It was just kind of a tedious time. Like after each surgery, he couldn't move very much for about 5 days. He couldn't shower or he wasn't supposed to do much other than keep his legs elevated just for the grass to take. And looking back, I wonder how did we even get through that? He couldn't even see very well as far as watching things because he couldn't put his contacts in. And we know it was God sustaining us and the prayers. And he healed so quickly. And this picture here is about a month after the accident. It was before his second surgery. And he has healed already so much just in that 1 month. So Psalm 116 has always been a special psalm for me. And I just really felt like it spoke to where we were with everything. And I'm not sure where we are.
Four and a half minutes.
So anyway, a lot of these verses just kept going over and over in my head.
And you can see his beloved hair began to grow back, so he was very happy about that. So then about a month after that occurred,
this is my little line.
Oh, that's her line.
Okay, yeah. So
you think after three times.
We were on a walk on a Sunday afternoon, and after the second accident, and I said, Matt, we are so blessed. Twice our son has almost died, but we've always had hope. Whenever we've gotten the news, he has always been alive, and we've always had hope, and we've always had something to pray about. I said, what do parents do when they get the news and there's nothing that can be done?
So about a month after this occurred, at this work accident, on a Sunday morning, I had learned the shocking news that Clayton Barth, my first cousin, was killed in a one-car accident. He was 25 years old, and it was quite a thing. This is a picture of his family here. This is Clayton, a little older, and when he was a cute little boy. But Mike and Joyce, Tate was not only an uncle, but just a close friend. So he was only 10 years older than I was, so we spent a lot of time together. And he enjoyed the same things. He liked sports, he liked cattle, and so we just did a lot together growing up. And I just really loved Tate and Joyce. You know those types, the people that outside of your immediate family, when you start repenting, who you go to tell, you know, who are the first people? It was Tate and Joyce were the first ones that I went and told that I gave my life to Christ. When I got engaged, they were the first ones that I told I was going to be getting married. So we had a very close relationship. And I can remember that you know, the very first time I took Jennifer to their home, we were sitting in the living room there enjoying conversation, and this little two-year-old boy, buck naked, comes running out, being chased by his older brother. And that was Jennifer's first experience with Clayton. And I just said, welcome to the Barths. You get what you get. So, but nonetheless, it was you know, that's the type of relationship that we had with Tate and Joyce.
Well, and their family was really close. There was three boys. Clayton was the youngest, and Joyce was just very dedicated to her children, and they just did a lot together with their family.
So, you know, Clayton was 25. He was a very talented athlete. The soccer coach said that he was one of the best soccer players that had ever gone through the system. He was extremely smart. He got through college, was an accountant, left this CPA firm he was at to work for his dad. His goal was to eventually take over the business. It was an irrigation business. And so, you know, we spent a lot of time when that crying together, just trying to figure things out. And, you know, there's a lot of questions and situations in our lives where we ask why. And we had no answers and still don't have any answers. We can't speak to that why question other than God is sovereign and God is good. And God is not good part of the thing, time, but he's good all the time. And so we just have to trust that our sovereign God, our sovereign Lord, knows what is best, even though it hurts so much. I can't say that I've hurt harder, deeper than during this time. When love is the strongest, that's when hurt is the hardest. And that was certainly the case for me. So we spent a lot of time crying together. This was a song that I would play because it just brought me comfort from Mercy Me. It says, I know you're able and I know you can save through the fire with your mighty hand. But even if you don't, my hope in you alone. I know the sorrow and I know the hurt would all go away if you just say the word. But even if you don't, my hope is you alone. And that brought comfort and peace during that time.
And also, Matt had said he was very touched when he watched me care for Josh. But during this time, it was very touching to me and the kids to see how much he really cared about his uncle. It was very noticeable. The kids would comment to me how sad Matt was. So it was just, he isn't a crier. He doesn't ever cry. And so I couldn't even really envision. We have been through hard things. We had lost grandparents and lost people we loved. But this was different.
Yeah.
So this picture was taken 3 weeks. This was one of a good time. 3 weeks before, it was June of 2022. 3 weeks before the electrical accident at the Grand Canyon. And
Josh has his hair, I have my dad hat, and we're a happy family. Little did we know what was gonna happen here.
Yeah, we were so thankful we were able to take this trip.
Yeah, so I'll finish here with the psalm here that we find comfort in. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me, bless his holy name. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all his benefits, who forgives all your iniquities and who heals all your diseases, who redeems your life from destruction, who crowns you with loving kindness and tender mercies. You know, we were asked today to share some of the hard times in our life, and we've had some difficulties. You've had some difficulties in your life, but we've had a lot of good things happen too. One of which we're incredibly grateful for is, you know, Josh is doing well, doing better in his Christian walk. And, you know, if that's what it took, then that's what it took. And we're thankful to God that that's where he's at. So through the pain, through the hurt, good comes from it. And we have found that to be so. And so I guess I would just encourage you as married couples today, it's not when, but if, it's not if, but when you go through difficult times, may that draw you closer to each other and closer to God in your knowledge and understanding of who he is. Because he is faithful, and he is good. Thank you very much.